recording, and the moment you tell me, I can start.
Okay, it's a great pleasure of mine to introduce our today's speaker. We're always happy to see Dror Bar-Natan, and today he will talk about over then under tangles.
Okay, so I should of course apologize. I'm not used to speaking at my basement. It's not my normal form of giving talks. I can only hope it will work well. As Vasily said, my title is Over Then Under Tangles. I hope you can read what I'm pointing at. It's a joint work with Zsuzsanna Janto and Roland van der Veen. And really what I want to tell you is that, sometimes brilliant ideas are wrong, but when they're wrong, it's not necessarily right to bury them. Sometimes it's what really you should do is dig around them and find the right stuff which is around. My talk, so the handout I'm using, all slides, everything, is available at http://drorbn.net/mo20, Moscow 2020. If you want to know what this looks like, I have it here, and where's the other tab? Sorry, I have it here. Maybe I'll make it bigger, maybe I'll make it smaller again. And if you if you click here, you'll get to the handout and you can follow it just like me or in a PNG form here. And later there will be a video here. And there is a click here for the paper in preparation by myself and Dancho and Van der Veen. Anyway, let's go back to the talk. So, an over then under tangle is a tangle for which every strand is divided in two, and in the first half it goes over everything, and then after the transition point it goes under everything. So here is an example. This tangle right here is an over then under tangle. The transition point is marked with a bow tie, and on strand number one, it goes over everything until it reaches the transition point. And then it goes under everything, except it's nothing, so it's a relatively simple one. Strand number two goes over everything until the bow tie. Well, over nothing, but that's everything. And then it goes under everything past that. So a single crossing is an over then under tangle. Now, this braid here is not an over then under tangle diagram. Because, well, if you look at strand number one, it goes over and then under. So I could put here a bow tie for the transition point. But if you look at the other strand, that's strand number two, it first goes under and then over. Well, that's not what it's supposed to do. However, this braid as a tangle is equivalent to the tangle shown here. The tangle shown here, well, I mean, you can just see that they're the same. And in the tangle shown here, I've put the bow ties to indicate the transition between over to under. And strand number one is over until the bow tie and then under. That's strand number two. Strand number one is over to the bow tie and then under. So this tangle diagram is not OU, but the tangle itself is OU because it has an equivalent diagram which is OU. Are you with me?
Yes, we are.
Good, next. So theorem, every tangle is an OU tangle. Proof, suppose you have, or what I really mean is, every tangle has a diagram, which is OU. Okay, proof. Well, here is a tangle which is not OU. So strand number 3 goes under, then over. But I can do what is called the glide move, shown here. Basically, I glide strand 1 up and strand 2 down. And the result now is OU on strand 3. But strand number 1 and strand number 2, whatever they were, was not spoiled, because strand 1 was over, and now it's 3 times over, but it doesn't change the transitions between O and U. And strand number 2 was under, and now it's 3 times under, and again, nothing got spoiled. Now, you can argue that I've made the stretches of overs and the stretches of under longer, and that correcting a single UO into an OU might not be enough, because I have to look at stronger, longer stretches, because the stretches of O and U became longer. But that's not a real issue, because you can fix OU issues in bulk. Meaning, if you have a whole stretch of going under, followed by a whole stretch of going over, and you want to correct it to be first over, then under, you can do it in bulk. So the fact that I've turned a single over to a triple over really doesn't matter, because anyway, I can fix things in bulk.
Denis Eliutko, maybe a couple of years ago, proved this theorem for knots, and I think he classified moves jointly with his student Anastasia Trofimova. So there was a theorem, and it was published in a certain journal. I don't know. It's a pity if Denis is not here. But I can. We can find the.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, you are here, so you can tell about your work about over and under.
So possibly you can send me the references later.
Okay.
But at the moment, let me speak. Okay. Anyway, by the way, the people who are there without video, if you can turn on your video, I much prefer it. I'd like to see you. I'd like to be liking a real talk. I'd like to be able to see if you're smiling or crying or petting your cat or whatever it is. Anyway, now, furthermore, the move, the fixing of UO intervals to become OU is well defined. In other words, if you correct a tangle to be an OU tangle, the resulting thing is unique. So basically what I have to show you is if you have two UO intervals and you fix them using glide moves to become OU, I have to show you that the result comes out the same, no matter in which order you do the fixing. Now, if the two UO intervals are far away from each other, it's obvious that the result is independent of the order in which you do the glide moves. So the only issue is if you have interacting UO intervals. So for example, here, this strand has a UO interval marked with a bullet, and this strand has a UO interval also marked with a bullet. And you can check what happens if you try to fix first this one and then that one, or the other way around. And you can check it, and the result is very simple. In both cases, you get this answer. So the result is independent of the order in which you fix. There is a second case Here is the second case. Maybe I will not dwell on it, but it doesn't matter in which order you do things here on the left. At the end, you come out to the same answer. So the conclusion is that UO intervals the conclusion is that the OU tangle associated with a tangle, with any tangle can be brought to OU form, and this OU form is unique. Now, furthermore, if you do Rademeister moves before the transition to OU, they become Rademeister moves after the transition to OU. And except that OU tangles, you cannot do Rademeister 3 moves on them. If you have an OU tangle, any Rademeister 3 will spoil the property that it is OU. You just draw the two sides of the Rademeister 3 and you see that if one of them is OU, the other isn't. So the only moves that you're left with are Rademeister 1 and Rademeister 2. And simplifying modulo Rademeister 1 and Rademeister 2 is completely trivial. Namely, if you do the greedy thing and do all simplifying Rademeister 1 and all simplifying Rademeister 2s, the resulting reduced OU tangle is canonically defined. So, conclusion, the classification of tangles, and in particular, the classification of knots, is completely trivial. Take any knot or any tangle, bring it to OU form. This OU form will reduce it modulo Rademeister 1 and Rademeister 2. The result is unique. We're done. Can I end my talk?
So what's wrong here?
Okay, so here's what's wrong. I cheated you about the general form of an OU tangle. When I drew an OU tangle, when I was drawing an OU tangle, I was drawing it like this. Sorry, a UO. When I was drawing a problem situation, a UO situation, I was drawing like this. And here, the two crossing, the U crossing and the O crossing are distinct. But in fact, they could be the same one. So here, if you go along this tangle, go through U and then through O, but the U and the O are the U and the O of the same crossing. And then if you try to repeat the game of sliding so as to fit, you find that it completely fails. Now, you can say, well, maybe this is not a big deal because it's a Rademeister 1 situation and I can, you know, Rademeister 1s, usually you can somehow deal with them one way or another. So, but it isn't only a Rademeister 1 situation. So here is a situation where, so if I go along, I go under, under, over, over. If I wanted to fix this, I would have to use a bulk glide move, but I cannot because one of the crossings involved in the sequence of U's is the same as one of the sequence of the crossings involved in the sequence of O's. And in fact, it's nice to see what happens if you start from the tangle I was drawing before and try to fix it. So if you look at the tangle I was drawing before, you see a UO interval here. You try to fix it, you get to here. You see another UO interval, you try to fix it, you get to here. You see another UO interval, you try to fix it. Basically, it swirls around itself and gets more and more complicated instead of simplifying. It's a bit clearer if you do the same for tangloids. So if people have seen Kaufman's notoids, tangloid is the same. A tangloid is a tangle where you are allowed to have an end in the middle of a diagram, and the rule is that nothing can cross over that end. Okay? So here is a tangloid that has an under, over, over situation. So under, over, over, I try to fix it, and I fix, well, you know, maybe I will not go through it, but it becomes a mess. Okay? So I had a brilliant idea. It turned out to be stupid. You know, I was aiming to classify knots in like one stroke. I failed. What's next? Well, so what I'm trying to tell you is that, you know, sometimes you can get something out of a brilliant idea that fails. So basically, it fails for knots. Maybe it works for some subset of the set of knots. And then maybe you get something for that subset. Maybe it works for some superset. Maybe it works for some subset of a superset, maybe in the neighborhood, you know, of knots. Maybe it works for some completion. So you see, if you look at the result, at the problem is that you get some non-convergent process. A process that looks a lot like what you get if you try to do, you know, long division of 1/3. You get 0.3, but you get a remainder, and the remainder is again 1, so you divide it, so you get 0.33, and the remainder is again 1, so you divide it, and you get 0.333. So this is a bit like 0.33333, and the way to make numbers more interesting is to actually allow such things and call the result the real numbers. And the real numbers are a completion of the numbers. So maybe in some completion, this will work. Maybe, I don't know. But then there are images as well. So again, maybe it fails in knot theory, but if you appropriately map knot theory into something in algebra, say Hopf algebra, Young-Baxter equations, God knows what, maybe in the image the trick will work and we will get something out of it. And finally, maybe something will work if you look at the completion of a subset of a superset or God knows what.
Excuse me, have you tried to look at grid diagrams or Legendrian knots where we have some obstructions on Rademeister 1?
No, but the issue is not a Rademeister 1 issue. So I have not tried these. I have tried several things. I think my theme is that there is a lot to try. There are many different things, places where it could work. I didn't try the things you suggested, but I want to emphasize that the issue is not just a Rademeister 1 issue. Okay? So in fact, here is an example. So consider this diagram. I've oriented it the wrong way. So oriented this way. So this diagram is not OU because, well, both strands are U then O. It has no Rademeister ones, so you can in fact try to fix it using a glide move. And if you try to fix it using a glide move, you get, what do you get? You get, let me try. So I want to glide this up so it comes out like this. Sorry, I So you fixed it, but now you created the Rider Master one. So so it's not just the Rider Master one issue. Anyway, here is, sorry, I went too far. Here. So let me tell you what are exactly the braids that are equivalent to OU braids. Sorry, what exactly are the tangles that are OU? Okay? So, definition. A cascade path along a tangle diagram is a path like shown here in red, in dotted lines in red, and it's a path that goes along the strands of the tangle with the direction of the flow, except at crossings, it can drop down from the higher level to the lower level, but not the other way around. Okay, but it doesn't have to drop down. So this cascade path here, so it's a bit like a cascade, you know, if you have a creek, it flows down and occasionally there is a waterfall. So here you flow with the strand and occasionally there is a waterfall, you catch another strand and then you can continue or drop down. Okay, so here is a cascade path on this tangle. Here is a cascade path on another tangle. This cascade path is closed. A diagram is called acyclic. So this diagram here is acyclic if it does not have closed cascade paths. And if you want a fun name for a closed cascade path, well, you can call it an Escher waterfall. Escher waterfall. I'm sure you've all seen pictures by Escher. There is a famous picture by Escher of a water canal that in which the water flows in a certain way, and at the end there is a waterfall, and the waterfalls right to the beginning. So this is not allowed in an acyclic diagram. Okay? A different way to say acyclic diagram is to say that every cascade path that begins at the beginning of strands after a finite amount of time must exit at the heads of the strands. Okay? Now, if you want, here are a few examples for cascade path, for acyclic diagrams. So, few examples. First of all, braids are acyclic because with a braid, you always flow in one direction. If you start at the beginning, you have to exit at the end. You definitely cannot form loops. Second example, OU tangles. Third example, so if two tangles, T1 and T2, are acyclic, then their composition, where you stack them one on top of each other, so T1 composed with T2, is also. Why? Basically, any path that starts at the bottom of T1 will continue to the end of T1, will enter T2, and will continue to the output of T2. And so any path that starts at the beginning must end at the end, and there is no... And that's the definition of acyclic. Okay? So, two conclusions. First of all, braids are OU. Why? So first of all, observe that a glide move does not change a cyclicity. So if you draw the two sides of the glide move, maybe I'll go back to show it. Where do we have a glide move? It's been a while. Right. If you draw the two sides of the glide move, any path that was passable on the left is also passable on the right and vice versa. So, you know, on the left, I could start at one, fall to two, and then fall to three, and then continue on two. The same is also possible here. I start at one and fall directly to two. So basically, anything that is possible here is possible here. So I went the wrong direction. Where did I want to go? That was it. So doing glide moves does not change the acyclic property. Now, if you have an acyclic diagram, the glide moves are always possible. In an acyclic diagram, you cannot have this bad situation where you go under and then over, because that's not acyclic. So the conclusion is that if you have an acyclic diagram, the argument of before actually works. You can always do a glide move. The result is again acyclic. You can always do a glide move. The result is again acyclic. So you can continue until you solve all the UO problem and turn the diagram into an OU diagram. Okay? So in particular, braids are OU diagrams. And also, braids act on the set of OU diagrams, because if you have an OU diagram, you can multiply it by a braid using this product, and then again simplify it into an OU diagram. Okay.
Is it true that if two braid diagrams are OU equivalent, then they are braid equivalent?
Yes. So in fact, we found that there is a map gamma from braids into OU tangles. And again, this is a trivial space. Still, it's trivial. The only thing you can do here is Rademeister 2, and you can simply do all of them, and then there's no motions left. So you have a map from braids to OU tangles. It turns out that it descends, or the way I wrote it, it's a map from the braid diagrams. But you can check that Rademeister moves before become trivial after. So it's actually a map gamma bar from braids. And my claim is that it's a complete invariant of braids. Okay? And in fact, Vasily, you wrote a paper some maybe 15 years ago in which I forgot what the title was, something about a complete invariant of braids, and it's equivalent to this one.
Yes, and also one more person to give credit is my co-author that time, Alexander Gaifulin, and now he is a great man. He found formulae for Pantryagin classes and did some other funny things in higher dimensional topology, so he's not working in low dimensional topology.
Okay, I don't know what to say. Good.
Drew, I have a question.
Sure.
So I'm just a little bit confused. So I see how the braid that you've drawn here has this this acyclic cascading path, but isn't that braid Rademeister equivalent?
They're not equivalent.
They're not?
Wait, maybe they are. Sorry, are they? No, they're not.
Oh, you're right. They're not. Okay. Well, so in the very first or one of the first boxes you showed us, you had just a single crossing and then you had a braid with two crossings. And we said that one wasn't OU, but then you can sort of change it to become OU.
That's too far back.
No.
Sorry. Here.
That one. Yeah.
Yeah. So this braid and here I've changed it to an OU, but this diagram is a cyclic.
So I guess I'm confused about what you're trying to say because you're saying that braids are acyclic?
Well, braids are acyclic, but not OU. But every acyclic diagram can be made OU. For every acyclic diagram, so if a diagram is acyclic, then the argument shown here with the glide moves is completely valid.
If I could jump in, the example that you showed with the simple tangle with a single kink, you mentioned if you add a single strand, this ruins the possibility of simply undoing a Reitermeister one move. But at least in the example you gave, I think that's equivalent to a braid. And in fact, if you...
Oh, maybe I this to pull out the example, but in general, okay. So in fact, this one can be fixed, but the algorithm doesn't fix it. Okay? The gliding algorithm fails, even though by other means you can fix it. So I should have given a more complicated example. Oh, wrong. Sorry, this one in fact cannot be fixed. Sorry, I did think about it before and I got confused. So you see, no, you cannot change it into maybe you can. Yeah, no, sorry. The example where you can't is a different one. I apologize. Mm-hmm. I really should have done this. I should have flipped this crossing. Had I flipped this crossing, it would be a greater fail.
Flipped both crossings?
No, only this one. So if you flip this... If you flip this crossing, this one, so in other words, you cut this one and you continue this one. If you do this, then when you try to fix it to be a braid, when you flip this kink, you create a kink on the other strand.
You mean flip the crossing beneath it? Two, because right now there's a Reitermeister 2 available.
Oh, sorry. You're right. Flip both. Sorry. Okay. Flip both. And yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. You're
this
right.
Messy. Okay.
I gave not the greatest example. Okay. Let's go back to where we were. So where were we? Oh, we were here. So again, the conclusion was that braids were OU and that we had a well-defined map from braids to OU diagrams. And now I want to describe this map by other means that will also tell you that it's injective. So OU diagrams make a complete invariant of braids. So here's how you do it. So the process, I hope you can see it. If you can't see it, I'll enlarge it in a minute. So you know what, let me just enlarge it. So basically, the thing here, the rectangle here, is a blue pool of tahini sauce. Everybody knows what's a tahini sauce? It's kind of a thick sauce, okay? And I've put lines of parsley in green, so like parsley powder on top of the tahini sauce, going from here to here, going from here to here, and going from here to here. And now I push in a braid which is made of metal wires. So as I push it in, right, so the process of pushing it in is shown here. As I push it in, it stirs the tahini sauce. So the first step is that these two, like if I push it in one unit, these two points trade places, and that forces the lines of parsley. Well, this line of parsley ends up going around and to here, and this line of parsley ends up going to here, as shown in the next picture. Now I push the braid further in, and these two points trade places, but the other way around. So this line of parsley goes to here, and this one becomes a great mess, the other green one. So you get this picture, and then I continue pushing my my braid in, and again, these two points trade places, the whole picture here gets mixed, and I get a picture like this. Now, look at the combination of green and black. So in the beginning, the combination of green and black was, well, the green pieces were trivial and the black pieces were the braid. So the combination was our braid. At the end, the green pieces are planar. So there are no crossings of green and green. The black pieces are trivial. So there are no black and black crossings. But blacks always look three-dimensionally from the angle from which I'm looking. Black always crosses over green. Here is black crosses over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 strands of green. So that's an OU tangle. If I go from black, black is the O part, green is the U part. So that was the transition from a braid to an OU tangle. And if you want to reverse it, all you have to do is to pull the blue points up a bit, and then you have, but now make green, let the green float away from the sauce. So make the green, now turn the green into some green string or something, and the green string sort of floats up a bit. And if you look from the side, you see a braid. End of story. Now, let's try to do the same with virtual braids. With virtual braids, or with virtual everything, virtual tangles, virtual braids, virtual knots, everything that I said, except the last argument, works just as well. The last argument fails. This last argument was three-dimensional and it failed for virtual braids. So let's see what happens for braids, but for virtual stuff. But first of all, let me remind you what is virtual stuff. So a virtual knotted object is, okay, what's a classical knotted object? To me, a classical knotted object is a planar graph with some annotations. Each vertex must be of degree 4 precisely. Furthermore, a cyclic order is specified on the edges coming out of the vertex, basically the order which means counterclockwise in the plane. Furthermore, one pair of strands is considered up and another pair of strands is considered down. But this is tiny local combinatorial annotation. So what's a virtual object? a virtual object is the same, exactly the same, except you remove the word planar. So again, a classical knot is an annotated planar graph, modulo Rademeister moves, and a virtual knot is exactly the same kind of annotated graph, but dropping the word planar.
My favorite problems. Is there any dynamical system which corresponds to virtual braids?
No comment. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, so here are a few examples. Here is a classical knot with three crossings, 1, 2, 3. Here is a virtual knot with two crossings, 1, 2. And you can look at this thing here and say, oh, that's a crossing. No, that's not a crossing. That's the non-planar graph drawn in the plane. When you draw a non-planar graph in the plane, there are spurious crossings that appear. So some people call them virtual crossings, but they are not crossing. They're not crossings. If I count the crossing number, this has crossing number 3, this one has crossing number 2. Crossing number 2, yes. Likewise, here is a braid, and here is a virtual braid. One of the things here is not really there. And finally, here is a tangle, a 3-crossing tangle, and here is a virtual 2-crossing tangle. So by the way, what is a virtual braid? So in a virtual braid, since any strand can cross any over any other one, basically the planarity constraint is removed. So after strand 1 crosses over strand 2, strand 3 can cross under strand 2, even though had it been in the plane, they were not positioned the right way. So basically, what is the virtual braid group? So let me just give you a quick presentation. So let me make more room here. So basically, the virtual braid group on n strand is the on n strands is the group generated by generators sigma ij, where one is less than or equal to I, not equal to j, not equal to j, less than or equal to n. So basically, this generator stands for strand I crosses over strand j in the positive direction. But there is the requirement that I would be next to j is completely removed. So I and j can be arbitrary because things can hop over to wherever they want to be. But then you have to mod out by relations. And there are two relations. Sigma ij, sigma kl is equal to sigma kl, sigma ij, provided ij, k, and l are all distinct. So basically, if two crossings involve strands that are remote from each other, then they commute. And the second relation is what you would normally call the Rademeister 3 move, and it's sigma ij, sigma ik, sigma jk is equal to the transpose of this. So sigma jk, sigma ik, sigma ij.
So it's a completely- And you enumerate them globally, I mean, so I and J correspond to the endpoints and not to the local position.
I and J correspond to the strands.
Yes.
The numbering corresponds to strands, not to position.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess what I wanted to emphasize is that it's a completely concrete group. It's not, you know, this is not, you know, it's not mysterious stuff. It's the group has completely concrete generators and relations. Okay. So the whole story that I mentioned before goes through except for the last bit. So I still have a map. Maybe I'll write it here. I don't know if you can see. I still have a map from virtual pure braids into virtual OU tangles. Maybe I'll still call it gamma. Maybe now I'll call it gamma sub V. Okay, just as before. But the argument that showed that it is injective fails. So it's a well-defined map, but the argument that shows it injective fails. Okay. Next, but I want to claim that it is nevertheless injective by a different argument. So, but first let's give credit. So some credit to Vasily, who I think conjectured it in a paper from about 15 years ago. So in a completely different language, and Vasily himself might not recognize that it's the same thing, but I believe this is equivalent to your to a conjecture of your from 15 years ago. And secondly, Oleg Sternthal had proven this in his thesis, which he wrote at the University of Toronto with me a few years ago. But again, his language was completely different. So it's the same, really the same theorem, but in a completely different language. Okay? Anyway, so let me start describing this proof. How much time do I have? Do I have an hour or?
I think 45 minutes or so.
Wait, maybe. No, I have 45 minutes to go or 45 minutes total?
Well, 45, well, I think we end at 8.
Yeah, 45 minutes to go. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so I have plenty of time. I have plenty of time. So let me describe the proof, roughly. Okay, so actually, let me go back a bit. So sort of the key point in the classical case was to somehow, you start from an OU diagram. I mean, okay, you go from braids to OU diagrams, but you have to show that you can go back. So you have to be able to extract a braid out of an OU diagram, and you use the three-dimensional argument, namely you pulled it up a bit and you looked from the side and what you see is a braid. That doesn't make sense for virtual knots. But what I want is to show you how you can nevertheless extract crossings one by one. So I'll show you that if at the bottom you have a virtual OU diagram, then you should be then there is a way to extract crossings one by one until you get back a virtual braid. Except it's a bit more complicated than that. So let's do it in slightly more detail. I guess. Let me create a white screen, and now I can write a little bit. So basically, I define a space X, calligraphic X, to be basically the intermediate steps of the extraction. So virtual pure braids on N strands, let me drop the N, cross virtual OU tangles. Again, let me drop the N, and I think I use lowercase v usually, so this way. So basically, this is the parallel of this green-black pictures that I was showing before made abstract. Okay? Partially a braid, partially an OU diagram. So let me define a relation on that space. So I will say that a beta 1 T1 is related to a beta 2 T2 if T2 is obtained from T1 by removing one crossing. So if T2 is equal to T1 multiplied by sigma ij inverse for some I and j. So I've removed the sigma ij from T2 and moved it from beta 1 to be to beta 2. Sorry, I've removed the sigma ij from T1 and I move it to beta 2. So if also beta 2 is equal to beta 1 times sigma ij to the positive 1, except I don't want to be prejudiced about whether I move a positive crossing or a negative crossing from the tangle side to the braid side. So really I mean here to the plus minus 1 and here to the minus plus 1. But I want to only do it if it makes sense. So I want also to have that the crossing number, let's call it xi, so the crossing number of T1 is greater than the crossing number of T2. So basically you gain something. You've moved the crossings from the tangle side to the braid side while reducing the complexity of T2. Okay? So, I'm going to show that in every connected component, so you see, this turns X into a directed graph. And I'm going to show you that in every connected component of this directed graph, there is a unique minimal element. Okay? So, assuming this is true, so you know what, let me just write it. So, claim every component of X has a unique minimal element. Assuming this is true, let me tell you why the map before is injective. Okay? So suppose, so now, suppose gamma of beta 1 is equal to gamma of beta 2. So in other words, suppose you have two braids whose OU tangles, sorry, gamma bar, whose OU tangles are the same. And sorry, I should have said virtual everywhere. Okay, you have two braids whose OU tangles are the same. Then the minimal element, so you see, in every component, there is a unique minimal element. So let's look at the minimal element of the component corresponding to beta 1 and the empty OU tangle, the identity OU tangle. Okay? Now, you can always move crossings from B1 to this side, and it's not hard to show that whenever you move a crossing from a braid to a tangle, the crossing number at the end is not the same. So either you increase the crossing number or you reduce the crossing number. So if you start moving the crossings one by one, you always have So you always have relations. You always have an arrow. Maybe sometimes you go with the arrow, sometimes you go against the arrow. Sometimes you increase the number of crossings, sometimes you decrease it, but there is always an arrow. So this is in the same connected component of this graph as the identity braid and gamma of beta 1. Right? Basically, I move the crossings one by one, so at the end I get to here, and I'm in the same connected component. So the minimal element here is the same as the minimal element here. But this is the same as the minimal element of the pair identity and gamma of beta 2, because gamma of beta 2 is the same as gamma of beta 1. And this is again the same as the minimal element of beta 2 and the identity. But you see, this element is already minimal. The crossing number is 0. Right, when I speak about minimality, when I compare crossing numbers, I compare them only on the OU side, on the tangle side. So this is already minimal. So this is simply beta 1 comma the identity, and I found that beta 1 comma the identity is equal to beta 2 comma the identity, meaning, so I found that if gamma of beta 1 was equal to gamma of beta 2, and beta 1 was equal to beta 2, and that's what injectivity means. So everything hinges on this claim. Every component of our graph has a unique minimal element. Okay, well, so let me remove the sorry, I have to remove it, and tell you about the diamond lemma. People know the diamond lemma?
Yes, we do.
They skip? No, I'll show it. I'll describe it nevertheless. Okay? So definition. So suppose you have a set X with a binary relation. You know what? Let's turn it directly into a theorem. So I have a set X with a binary relation arrow on it. Then first of all, I define a new binary relation. So the new binary relation is denoted by double arrow, and it's the so-called transitive closure of the original binary relation, and it's defined as follows. So if X is double arrow to Y means that you can go from X to Y by a finite number of steps using the old relation. So basically, this is equivalent to X0 is equal to X, sorry, let's write it differently. X is equal to X0, arrows X1, arrows X2, arrows all the way up to Xn, which is Y. For some sequence, X1 up to Xn, okay? Second, I will say that, so I will assume that the original arrow is so-called, you know, I'm not sure why I'm not using straight line. So I'm assuming that the original relation is Noetherian. So maybe you've seen Noetherian in ring theory. It means that every descending sequence of ideals must terminate. So it's the same here. Every descending sequence must be finite. So if you have X1 goes to X2 goes to X3 and so on, then this a sequence like this must be finite. And finally, I'm assuming the diamond condition. And the diamond condition says the following. If you have A arrow B and A arrow C, then there exists D such that B double arrow D and C double arrow D.
Well, am I right? That the diamond condition is proved like that? Look at the classical situation, and everything is there.
Yes, essentially yes. I mean, you're asking about. I'm not yet returning to the proof, but. I'm not even finished stating the diamond lemma, okay? This is still an assumption of the diamond lemma, but you are right about how this assumption is proven in the case we were talking about. So pictorially, this means that if you have A and you can, and it has an arrow to B and an arrow to C, then by a then you can find a D such that a sequence of arrows goes from B to D and a sequence of arrows goes from C to D, and that's the diamond. Okay, so far these are assumptions, and now the conclusion of the diamond lemma. So the conclusion is then every connected component of X has a unique M. So maybe I'll give the connected component the name Y. So inside every connected component, there is a unique M, which is minimal relative to double arrow, namely such that for every Y in the connected component, Y double arrow into M. So basically, there, given this condition, there is some bottom M and everything must connect to it. Okay, so this is a standard combinatorial lemma. It's not so trivial, actually. It's a bit tricky to prove, but it's well known, and my claim is that the X we had and the arrow we have satisfy the condition of the diamond lemma, satisfy the conditions of the diamond lemma.
Sure. So, I've got a question. So the Noetherian condition, stop erasing out, you just erased it, it's fine. The Noetherian condition, I'm a little bit confused. Does that mean that every component is finite?
No, because you can go up arbitrarily far.
Oh, so you can only be finite from the bottom.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Or you can have components that are arbitrarily wide. So, you know, you can have a component with a single M, but infinitely many things one level above it. Okay? So no finite, so the only finiteness is in descending. You can only descend finite amount. So my claim is that our X satisfies the conditions of the Diamond Lemma. So again, if I set Xn to be the virtual pure braids cross virtual OU tangles, and the relation is as follows. So what was it? Beta 1 T1 goes to beta 2 T2, but you know, now I'll be a bit less careful. Let's say that, well, they relate if there exists a generator that you can pull from T1 into beta 1. But let me say, in that case, let me say that they relate by this generator, sigma ij. And I should be putting here to the plus minus 1, but let me be, again, a bit less careful and do only the case of positive powers. The negative powers are the same. So if we have this, and beta 2 is beta 1 times this generator, T2 is sigma ij inverse. I extract the generator from T1. So T2 is sigma ij inverse times T1. And the crossing number of T2 is less than the crossing number of T1. But sorry, I should have said, I mean T1 and T2 are OU tangles. I mean the crossing number in their unique reduced form. So reduce all Rademeister 2 moves and Rademeister 1 moves, and only then compute the crossing number. Okay, so the crossing number in the reduced form is smaller for T2 than for T1. So this pair of conditions taken together, I will write as sigma ij divides T1. So sort of divides mean you can pull it out, but if you can pull it out, you make it smaller, not bigger. Okay, so that's what these two conditions together mean. Okay, now I'm sorry for my for having to erase the board I just used. I don't know, I have limitations. So again, remember, sigma ij divides T means you can extract sigma ij from T, and the result has fewer crossings. Okay, so now, sorry, where was I? Okay, so now a significant lemma. So if sigma ij divides T, you know what? There is also the condition for when sigma ij inverse divides T, but I'm definitely not going to talk about it. So let's make this one in the center and larger. Okay, so sigma ij divides T if T contains a pattern like this. Let me first say it in words. So some initial segment of strand I is parallel to the O part of strand J. Here is strand J. It goes from its beginning to the transition point. So it goes over, 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 and then it starts going under. The transition point is a bow tie. And in that interval, it crosses over a number of other strands, marked here schematically only, okay? So strand I is parallel on the left to J, to the transition point, and right after that, it crosses over J in a positive crossing. Okay? Now, this condition is drawn in the plane, but it can be stated completely graph theoretically. It's not a planar condition. The plane plays no role. When I said left, it could have been, right, I is parallel to J on the left. It could have been just described as you go along J, you hit a crossing, you turn left. This information of left is available locally at each crossing. The next crossing you see is a crossing with I. So, I mean, this is describable in the world of virtual knots. And again, sigma ij divides t, if and only if T contains this pattern. Proof. So there are two directions. One is easy, one is hard. So the easy direction is, suppose T contained this pattern, I need to show that if I extract sigma ij, I lower the number of crossings. So in other words, I need to take this tangle and act on it by sigma ij inverse. Well, that just means glue sigma ij inverse at the bottom. That's the picture you get here. This is not an OU tangle. Now I need to reduce it to an OU tangle. To reduce it to an OU tangle, you do a glide move, you get the picture here. And then you see lots of Rademeister twos that are available here. You do all the Rademeister twos, you get this picture. And this picture has fewer crossings than the picture we started from, QED. So basically, the sigma ij at the end, at the negative crossing of I over j ended up canceling the positive one from here, and we ended up reducing the number of crossings. The other direction is much harder, and I think I'll do it only schematically. Okay, so here are 12 diagrams that explain what is going on. Okay, but I will not go through all of them. Okay, I mean, this is an explanation in great detail. I mean, it's not so hard, but I've written every detail. So let's start. So suppose I have a tangle and I know that if I multiply it at the bottom by sigma ij inverse, the result has fewer crossings. Now, what do I know about the tangle I started from? Well, I know lots of things. For example, I know that I goes over, 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 and then under, but I don't care about this information. I only care that I exists. So I only wrote that I exists. But I do care about what happens on J. So J goes over strands 1, 2, 3 up to K and until the transition point. And these strands 1, 2 up to K could be the futures of strands I and J. This is irrelevant. They could also be with repetitions. I mean, I'm not saying that these pieces belong to different strands. They could belong to the same strands, but again, this is irrelevant. These are strand pieces, 1, 2, K. Okay? So I've said nothing, right? I said this is what a general tangle looks like, a general OU tangle looks like. Now I multiply it by sigma ij inverse and I get this picture. Now I try to fix it to be OU, and I has no problem because I've added an O crossing at the beginning, and that's the place where I'm allowed to add O crossings. J, I've added a U crossing, a U at the beginning. So it goes U and then lots of O's. So J got spoiled. Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm. So the next step will be to go from here to here and do a glide move. Okay? But, so that's what you get. You glide the overstrand until after the transition point. And now everything is kosher. But instead of reducing the number of crossings, I've added 2K crossings, right? Like for each one of those K understrands, I've added 2 crossings, one on the right, one on the left, one on the right, one on the left. So I've added 2K crossings instead of reducing it. So the only way this could reduce is if there will be Rittmeister moves available. You stare at this picture for a little while, and the only way there could be a Rittmeister move available is if this actually continued to here and this went under. Then you'd have a Rittmeister move right here. So the only way you'd have a Rittmeister move is if the picture was here, it was like this. Now you perform the Rittmeister move and you still have too many crossings. And the only way you can reduce further is if you had a Rittmeister move, a Rittmeister 2 move here as indicated here. And, but you see, this essentially forces strand I to be parallel to strand J. You keep going, and make sure that you reduce to nothing. And at the end, the conclusion is that strand I must have been parallel to strand J to the
sure.
Okay? No, so again, I'm not showing the details. Somebody over there is speaking on the phone or something and should switch to the mute himself.
No, pan normalny, po prostu paliczka.
What is it? Belov. Alexei Belov. Can somebody tell Alexei Belov to turn off his mic? Alexei Belov, can you mute yourself? Okay.
Dror, as the host, you also have the power to do that.
I know, but I don't want to use my powers, my superpowers. I'll use it if I have to.
I wrote to him. I hope that he will mute the mic now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So now I can start with the diamond collision. So suppose, okay, now I have to, ouch! Sorry, I dropped my mouse. Now I don't have a mouse, so I cannot do anything to anybody. You can use this opportunity to... Okay, do I have a mouse back? Yes. Okay, I've muted him. Okay, so now suppose I have a situation when I can reduce a tangle in two directions. In other words, suppose I have sigma ij divides t, and also sigma jk divides t. There are other considerations, there are other possibilities to check. There is, for example, the situation sigma ij divides t and sigma kl divides t. Again, there are other cases to check, but I'm doing only the hardest. This is the hardest. Suppose you can reduce t in two directions, both using sigma ij and using sigma jk. Then, by the lemma, well, since since T is divisible by sigma jk, it means that J is parallel to K up to its transition period point, and then it crosses over it. Since sigma ij divides T, it means that I is parallel to J until its transition point, and then it crosses it. But in particular, it means that I crosses over K right after J. So basically, if you have this configuration, or if you have that an initial part, a half diamond of this form, it means that P, the tangle, sorry, it means that T contains a piece that looks like this. And then it's easy to see, well, if you divide by sigma ij, you get this, which it has fewer crossings. If you divide by sigma jk, you get this, which has fewer crossings. But you can easy to see that here I is parallel to k until its transition point. So you can divide by sigma ij and you get this. Here, again, you can divide by sigma ik, you get that. Here you look at it and you see that it's divisible by sigma jk. This is divisible by sigma ij. And in both cases, the overall quotient becomes this. And we have completed the diamond. The diamond, sorry, it's a diamond shown on the side. The diamond is, if you start here, you can go to both of these sides, but then from both of these sides, you can get to here. The effect on the braid side, so here I pulled out an ij from T, then I pulled out an ik, then I pulled out a jk, and here it's in the opposite order. This is what I pull out of T. That stuff gets added to the braid side, to beta. But what I add to beta is precisely a Rademeister 3 move, which is trivial. So I really did complete the diamond. And that's basically the end of the proof. So the conclusion is that the map from virtual braids to OU tangles classifies virtual braids. Well, I've actually implemented it. I tend not to believe myself unless I implement things. So here is the program. I'm not going to go through it, but basically here is the part that does glide moves. Here is the part that does reductions, modulo Rademeister 1 and Rademeister 2. What have I done? Here is the part that generates all braids and computes all their gamma invariants. And at the end, I get results. So if you look at n strand pure virtual braids with up to m crossings, so I can generate all braid diagrams, you get them by the millions, you compute their gamma, their OU invariant, and you get that, I don't know, there are 10,873 braids with 4 strands and 3 crossings, and so on. Vasily, you've muted yourself. Vasily, you're talking, but I can see your mouth moving. You're muted.
I want to ask a question. Do you get a map to the automorphism of a free group?
I mean, there is always a map from braids to the automorphism, from virtual braids to the automorphisms of a free group. But it's a lossy map. It's not an injective map.
Okay.
I mean, basically, well, it's classifying for W braids, not for virtual braids.
Okay.
Now, I should say that I've checked much of this table. I don't remember how much, but sort of about, you know, basically something like this part of the table, the part above this line, I've checked from the other direction. Namely, this was computed by computing invariants. You generate all braids, and you compute their invariants, and you see how many distinct values they have. But alternatively, you could impose all Riedemeister moves on them and compute the size of the quotient. So this I did too, and the answers are the same, as they should be. Okay? Okay. Okay. So I have 5 minutes, and that's not enough time to tell you that there is much more to OU than just braids. And in fact, the reason I got interested in OU has nothing to do with braids. In general, I'm not a braid person. You know, I tend to do quantum algebra stuff, okay? So OU has something to do with quantum algebra as well. Namely, in quantum algebra, let me start differently. The problem with the reduction to OU is that if you have a braid like this, you want to use glide moves, but somehow the U part and the O part are tied together and you can't move them. They are attached. They belong to the same crossing. So you want to look for ways to loosen the connection, to make the connection between the two sides of the crossing a bit more loose. And one way is the standard way to get invariants in quantum algebra. So in quantum algebra, what you often do is you map a crossing into a so-called R matrix. So an R matrix, which is an element of some algebra H tensor itself. And basically you write R as sum of AI tensor BI, sorry, the way I think I usually write it as BI tensor AI, BI tensor AI, where BI and AI are elements of the algebra. And then you put the BIs on the overstrand and the AIs on the understrand. And then you multiply the algebra elements that you see. So this you do on each crossings. So globally, you get lots and lots and lots of algebra elements on all the strands. You multiply them along all the strands and you get an invariant with values in some tensor power of H. Now, for this invariant to work, R must satisfy the Young-Baxter equation. How do you get solutions of the Young-Baxter equation? Okay, so I don't have time. It's not going to happen now, but one way is to, instead of sorting the O and U at the topology level, you sort the B and A's at the B's and the A's at the algebra level. And again, I really cannot give you details, but if you do this right, this leads to the so-called Drinfeld double construction, Drinfeld double. Construction, which gives you solutions of the Young-Baxter equation out of almost nothing. So almost out of thin air, just like OU seems to generally work, okay? And all quantum invariants, so basically all the invariants associated with all semi-simple algebras come this way. So if you look carefully at the Dreamful Double construction, it's really a variant of this OU story that I was telling you about the whole talk. Now, here is another example. So another way to loose, to make the bond between the two sides of the of a crossing more loose is to use surgery. So, I should go back. I should tell you that I gave a talk about this, and you, if you really want the details, you should go to my website and look for the talk number 4 I gave in Montreal in July 2019, in the CRM, Center Research Mathematique. So, and there is a video there, so you can actually see the details. So if you have a crossing, here I wrote, made a double crossing, but there is a similar story for single crossing. You can achieve it by doing surgery on a loop. But now this loop is somehow a more loose way of connecting the two strands, because the loop itself you can move. And again, no time for details, no place for details, but OU stories. Oh, sorry, but the moment you start talking about surgery, you have to talk about three manifolds. So there are OU stories in three manifolds. And if you go to the same conference in Montreal and listen to the talk Dylan Thurston gave, it's about that. And then there is more. So if you read carefully the Enriquez universal quantization procedure of Liebye algebras, the key trick is to sort O before U. In fact, everything else about quantization of Liebye algebras, if you look deep into it, you see that it's about OU sorting. In fact, in Lie algebras, sorting all the O's before all the U's is parallel to the PBW theorem and normal ordering, and that's the relation, essentially. Finally, furthermore, there is a paper by Odon and Mailhan about the something about peripheral systems of homotopy links. And if you look at it carefully, the main trick they use is to go, is to switch to OU tangles. And finally, if you read my paper on balloons and hoops, something about two knots in R4, again, it's the one dimension up version of OU. So the story repeats in many places. And Roland is not here. Roland would have been mad at me for saying that OU is sort of the opposite of OU, right? So alternating knots is what lots of people study, but I'm telling you that OU knots, anti-alternating knots, are also fine. And I'll stop here.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions to draw? So maybe we should turn on all the microphones. Are there any questions? Yeah, if it's not the case, so thank you again. And we have at least 3 seminars, and Denise will send the news about our seminars just now. We have nice speakers, and so we are very happy to have you here. And so we will invite you again. So if you don't mind, in some time, and we'll invite.
The video will be on the website within a few hours.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Troy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.